This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by a new natural product from Future Farm Botanicals, created exclusively to help promote a better immune response: elderberry with zinc and echinacea. Future Farm's elderberry with zinc and echinacea is the first to combine these three powerful ingredients together. Elderberry is packed with antioxidants, vitamins, and may boost your immune system. Echinacea has been shown to activate chemicals in the body that decrease inflammation. And zinc activates T lymphocytes. Low zinc has been associated with increased susceptibility. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216. That's 888-841-7216. Or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Elderberry with zinc and echinacea is an all-natural, science-based formula and works without adverse side effects. Take advantage of Future Farm's buy two, get one free offer at MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And once again, it is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla. You know, time really flies when you're in lockdown. You know, it just seems like the days on which we do Q&A with Layla, we do it once a week. It seems like we just did this yesterday. But
It does.
Yeah.
It does. And I don't know why. You figure on lockdown, it would get very boring and time would pass very slowly.
Right, right.
Not so.
No, it's very fleeting. The days meld into one another. They don't have any character definition if you're not going to work. That'll soon be remedied as we go back into the office next week. Because we are, after all, an essential service. And while the rest of New York City, to some extent, remains in lockdown, medical practices, I think, are somewhat of an essential service. You know, we actually had an interesting discussion. We did a telemedicine Skype conference, you and I, with one of our patients who is diabetic.
Yes.
And, you know, he made me think of, you know, the tremendous toll of this coronavirus thing. Because if he hadn't been working with us, he would be in sort of a dark zone. He really wouldn't, you know, he might be, you know, binge eating. And
yes,
because of the inability to exercise, he might be gaining weight. And because he initiated care with us before the coronavirus crisis, he's already dramatically improved his blood sugar. I mean, he's not out of the woods yet. I asked him, you know, to see an endocrinologist. I just wanted to make sure if his diabetes management was correct, if he needed some additional medication. Also, from one of those endocrinologists, he can get a prescription for continuous glucose monitor, which would be expensive if he just bought it on his own. And if I prescribe it as a non-endocrinologist, he might not get reimbursement. So I said, you know, go see an endocrinologist. He can't get an appointment with an endocrinologist.
Wow.
I would say, if you're a diabetic, seeing an endocrinologist sounds like a pretty important thing to do. Well,
that is an absolute essential service. So really, these definitions need to be clearer. Really.
But anyway, you know, the good news is that with diet, with some more exercise, I gave him a little testosterone. He is on, medication, metformin.
Yes.
You know, he is doing better. I mean, he's not out of the woods yet. And, you know, I think he has a ways to go. But it was actually very encouraging to me because, I thought to him, oh, this poor guy, you know, he's isolated. You know, he can't go to work. Things could go badly for him, but actually, he's taken the opportunity to spend time working on himself. So that was really encouraging.
Mm-hmm. That was encouraging. So,
A lot of people, you know, people with cancer, people with chronic diseases, people with, diabetes who need management, they're not getting access to their healthcare practitioners. Anyway,
Can't go to a dentist.
I mean, my dentist sent me a thing saying, we have limited hours. If you have an emergency, come in. Okay, fine. I mean, if you have like...
It's available in an emergency, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But for routine, I don't think there are a lot of people showing up for like you know, routine tooth cleaning, that's going to be deferred, and, you know, maybe people will develop cavities, and, you know, it's all kinds of downstream effects of this lockdown. At any rate, you know, I think what's of concern lately, I certainly know this because I've been talking to parents of young children about this in my family and among friends, and they're all up in a huff because there have been these cases of kids with very serious autoimmune problems, somewhat resembling a vascular disease, Kawasaki's syndrome, which is something that, you know, we see very rarely in pediatrics. I mean, I learned about it. I'm not a pediatrician, so I don't.
And it's not about a motorcycle.
Exactly. You know, and it's definitely not about let the good times roll, right?
Right. Yes.
it's a bummer. It's also been analogized to toxic shock syndrome, which the women got from the tampons, you know, the that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
right.
Yeah. So what I've said to them is, you know, they've said, look, I'm in a panic because at first we thought our kids were exempt from this, that kids don't get this. And now we see that not only can kids get this, but they can get a very serious meltdown that is in some ways similar. It's like a kid version of a cytokine storm, you know, that meltdown that causes people to need a ventilator and be, you know, in a hospital.
Yeah. So do you believe that this is related to COVID-19?
Well, here's the thing. First of all, I said, you know, hold on. I mean, I think that the media and public officials are being very irresponsible about this because they're sowing a great deal of panic around a phenomenon that is not that well understood. I mean, you see this now in the lead of the news stories is that, you know, we're seeing like numerous cases of children. Okay, first of all, it's not numerous. It's over, you know, states in which there are millions and millions of kids. We're seeing, you know, maybe double digit. Okay. Also, it seems to, yes, possibly be related to coronavirus, but some of the kids are developing this apparently without coronavirus. So, you know, so what I said is, I didn't know the full facts of this, but, you know, I got an email from a family member at like, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, actually I wasn't up then, but I woke up and I said, you know, what is she doing?
Okay,
like
sending me. Answering email at 1 o'clock.
No, I'm not me, but because I was sleeping soundly. But, you know, I'm asleep at 1 o'clock because I go to bed early and I get up early. But, you know, so I said, you know, first, what are you doing, you know, at 1 o'clock in the morning sending me this urgent email? And, you know, I could see the anxiety behind that. It's the middle of the night. You know, you read a news story or you hear something and you know, right away you want, you know, what you want to call a family member who has some insight on this. So what I said is let's wait and, you know, for a couple of days and get some more information on this. But I'll bet you anything that the kids, unlike your kid, who's super healthy, all have some kind of what is called a comorbidity. They have some underlying immune problem. They may have severe asthma. They may have cystic fibrosis. They may have developmental disorders. They may have autism. They may have gastrointestinal ailments. So many children have very severe allergic ailments. So many kids are taking medication. You know, so many kids now are obese and have diabetes. So I said, let's wait a day or two. Sure enough, report comes through that 80% of the kids who have this Kawasaki-like syndrome, this mysterious syndrome, have some underlying predisposition, some comorbidity, which renders them more likely to get this. And I would like to see studies of, you know, their environment, study, you know, as you know, you might point out, their levels of vitamin D, their levels of zinc, what do they eat? You know,
what do they eat? What kind of toxic exposures, whether inside the home? Because if these kids are at home all day now, on lockdown, what are they exposed to there that may be contributing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are mom and dad going nuts cleaning the house with toxic containers and things? I mean, we don't know.
Right.
Are they going a little crazy with all the disinfecting?
Yep. Did they see a couple of cockroaches or something, and now they've opened up, you know, like a one of those bombs to, you know, spray? I mean, I'm just, look, I don't know. I'm just speculating what, you know, so we kind of have to look behind these alarming headlines. The problem is, I think there are some people who are the ultra-cautious faction who are saying, no way, no how should we open up the schools for summer school and even in the fall, you know, and this is adding sort of impetus to that. There's even some, I just heard that the unions in New York, they don't want to allow the kids to go back to school because they feel that the school employees and teachers will be exposed to coronavirus because through the kids. And, you know, studies are now showing that kids can get it. Kids can carry it. It's actually not impossible for kids to carry it, even though many of them are asymptomatic, but it's less likely under the age of 10 that they're going to carry it. But can you imagine? I mean, I read an article about what they're doing worldwide, you know, all the different countries in terms of opening up. I mean, how do you tell a four-year-old to wear a mask and not touch his neighbors, you know, and not share crayons or toys and not pick up stuff from the floor and wash your hands 14 times a day? I mean, how do you do that? And in Hungary, for example, they're enforcing the use of masks by stationing policemen in the schools, whereas other countries are kind of laissez-faire. You know, most parts of Germany are, they're just saying let it roll. So, you know, it's creating a lot of controversy. It's creating a lot of consternation. I think it's really bad for kids not to be in school.
Yes.
Because notwithstanding the excellence of some of these online programs, it's not the same. Also, frankly, you know, we all need to socialize because, yeah, the family's great, but you have to go forth into the world, into the workplace, you know, whatever your profession is, and you have to be able to play nicely with others.
And that's right.
If you don't learn anything at school, it's mostly play nicely with others.
Right. Listen, and looking at that blue light all day long, their young eyes.
Yeah.
You know, they might get cataracts by the time they're 35.
At the very least, need glasses like old Four Eyes, me. You know, I was the first kid in my class to wear glasses. But I was kind of a bookworm.
You were a bookworm, right?
Yep. I was reading Dr. Seuss at four, so. So anyway, so and that's where I get a lot of my strange ideas from.
Coming back to possible toxic exposures, I was watching on 60 Minutes the other night about Amazon and their warehouse and disgruntled employees feeling like they should get hazard pay and so forth. And then they were talking about how often they all get disinfected. There's a guy in a hazmat suit right. walking around with a ginormous sprayer. And this is going on every night. I'm saying, oh my goodness, but what about the toxins of all that?
Do you feel better now that your workplace has been disinfected 14 times every day? You know, it's, I mean, we'd have to see because there may be less toxic ways of sterilizing environments, but it is possible that, you know, could make things worse. Well, anyway. Okay, there's a lot of controversy, you know, and I got into some of the controversies in our newsletter this week. You saw our newsletter. It's going out. We'll cover some of the most important controversies surrounding coronavirus. But let's get to some of the questions.
Yeah, well, we've got a few, Dr. Hoffman, relating to coronavirus.
By the way, just let me mention radioprogram@AOL.com. Is the place to send questions. And, you know, before we get to questions, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share an important message with our listeners. Then we'll get right to questions, okay?
Okay.
Great. Let's hear it. There's never been a more important time to ensure your immune system is operating at its peak. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a new natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals created exclusively to help promote a better immune response. Elderberry with zinc and echinacea. Future Farm's elderberry with zinc and echinacea is the first to combine these three powerful ingredients together. Elderberry is packed with antioxidants, vitamins, and may boost your immune system. Echinacea has been shown to activate chemicals in the body that decrease inflammation, and zinc activates T lymphocytes. Low zinc has been associated with increased susceptibility. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216. That's 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Elderberry with zinc and echinacea is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. Take advantage of Future Farm's buy two, get one free offer at myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen Pro. When a virus attacks a cell, a vital coenzyme called NAD may decline up to 80%. NAD is essential to defend the cell, to repair the cell, and to restore energy. True Niagen Pro, also known as nicotinamide riboside, can increase NAD. True Niagen Pro promotes cellular repair and energizes your cells. True Niagen Pro, cellular defense for life. For more information to purchase, go to drhoffman.com/TrueNiagenPro. That's True, T-R-U. drhoffman.com/TrueNiagenPro. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you, and doesn't get any better than that, does it, these days? All right, what's our first question? Radio program at AOL.com, the destination for questions. Take it away, Layla.
We've got an email from Dorothy. Dr. Hoffman, thanks for all the great podcasts and newsletters. Right now, I need urgent advice. My husband and I are in Florida. What is the best way for us to get back home to New York? Should we fly? If we do, we'd have to change planes at North Carolina and then fly to JFK. Or should we drive home and stay at a hotel overnight? Or should we take a train and stay in a private compartment called a bedroom with our own private bathroom? I know you would be wary of flying on a plane, but we are anxious to get home. What is the best way?
The safest way is to walk while wearing a mask. No, I'm just kidding. lie down by the side of the road, just get in a pile of leaves and, then you'll get Lyme disease if you do that. So that's not good.
Right.
I included that question. We said, shall we talk about it? Just to illustrate the dilemma that's facing Americans, as we emerge from the lockdown, because, obviously we're going to emerge, but the ick factor, the fear factor has been so deeply instilled that just people are afraid of all forms of contact. Now, given those three modes of transportation, people are flying in planes now, and planes are disinfected, and planes, by and large, are less occupied. On the other hand, plane cabins are somewhat constricted. One of the things that I will tell you that is encouraging to me is, at 7 o'clock every night, we applaud the courage of the health practitioners, the nurses and the doctors and the respiratory therapists and, all the people in the front lines of the hospital exposing themselves to enormous peril because the virus, if anywhere is in the hospitals, right?
Yeah.
And we do read these very, very heartbreaking stories of people on the front lines. There's one case of one guy who was in his 60s. He was a retired physician, and he volunteered to fly out from Colorado to work in a hospital in New York during the surge. And then, it kind of led up, so he decided to go home, but he contracted coronavirus, and he ended up dying. Okay? It was very tragic. And we hear these stories. However, the statistics are now out, and Governor Cuomo just repeated these statistics. Very remarkably, the incidence of COVID-19 among the health professionals who work in hospitals is lower than among the general populace.
Huh.
Which suggests something, which suggests that if you exercise the proper precautions, even in an environment which is inherently very high, high risk. And these people are not wearing spacesuits. They do wear masks and they wear gloves and they, don't touch their eyes and nose. And, they do all the right things. They wash their hands. And they do contract it sometimes, but not at higher rates than ordinary people. Now, we do have these stories of some of the first doctors who blew the whistle on this in China, getting sick and dying of this. And they're relatively young individuals. They weren't particularly elderly or infirm or a lot of comorbidities. So maybe they were caught unawares before the PPEs were being utilized to a high degree. But so I just say that by way of reassurance. You know, not to minimize the heroism of people who work in hospitals, but, you know, the people in the hospitals, some are getting sick. They're not dying in droves. It's a terrible tragedy, up to, high double digits, maybe as many as 100, have died, nationwide. But still that, you know, compare that to the toll of 78,000 or 82,000, however many it is today, you know, the death toll, that it's not that high. So, that's a, by way of reassurance. Now, I would say that, you know, given the choice of being confined in a plane, or being, you know, there was,
staying overnight night in a hotel if they have to drive.
Right.
The drive is definitely at least 24 hours.
Well, the drive is not, the drive is not bad, you know, and then you have your own personal compartment, you know, which you can swab down and, you know, presumably it's your compartment. Not a lot of other people have been in it. But then, you know, you have to get out, you have to eat, you know, and you might get some exposure. It takes a long time. It's a long drive. It's kind of exhausting, especially, you know, for older people. You know, so the, what I ended up suggesting to this person is that they take the train, you know, this is like a kind of a, what is that called? The car?
Auto train.
Auto train. Yeah, the auto train.
Yeah, where they have a private compartment.
Yeah, and they have the private compartment, and believe me, they're really swabbing down these compartments now. I think they're really doing their darndest to do a higher level of cleanings for these public conveyances. And, you know, it's, you know, you don't have to share it. You're not sitting with strangers, like on a plane. And, you know, you're going to have some contact. You know, the food can be brought to you if you want. You can think and leave it outside, and you can just take it in.
She's wondering if the air quality might be like those on cruise ships with, breathing the air.
I think that that's changed. The other thing is, I think workers are now screened, you know, for pretty carefully. I also think there's a lot less presentism. You know, people take it seriously now. I mean, it used to be, I'll confess to this, is if I have a little cold or something, like a minor cold, you know, and I have a whole list of patients, I'll take, you know, like an antihistamine or something, you know, some vitamin C, some clear nasal spray, you know, some zinc lozenges, and I'll go to work.
Yes.
And I don't mask and glove, but I do. Patients offer to shake my hand. I go, no, thank you. Or, you know, they want to give me a hug or something. Don't do that. It's like, I sit back, you know. But now, if anyone has the slightest intimation of a respiratory infection, I think part of it is voluntarism, but part of it is, you know, you go to work and you got a red nose and just snot coming out of your nose. It's going to just go home.
Go home.
Yeah.
Shelter, exactly.
And even I think on these public conveyances, they're going to do more and more. This is like, let's test the work people randomly. You know, it's like, we're going to just, you know, before you come, you know, you've been sick, we're going to test you, you know, or you look sick, or just randomly they may test people. You know, like random drug tests, like, you know, and just to keep them honest.
Right.
So I think the risk is low. I mean, look, let me just give you another analogy. I just prepared some chicken breasts. I marinated the chicken. It's hard to find chicken breasts these days. There's a real shortage, and they're expensive too when you buy the organic.
They are very expensive.
Yeah. I scored some chicken breasts. So I prepare them on a cutting board. And, you know, chicken does have salmonella, and it has, you know, campylobacter and other bacteria that can cause, you know, E. coli and all this kind of stuff. And I did it on the cutting board. So, you know, I washed the cutting board, but I didn't sterilize the cutting board in an autoclave. I just washed it with soap and water a little bit. I washed my hands.
Hot water and soap.
Yeah. I didn't season the chicken and then touch the chicken and taste the, you know, the seasoning, because I know that's a way that, you know, but, you know, did I put a hood on? Did I put, you know, mask and gloves? I mean, it's sort of an 80-20 principle. I think you can get 80% of the benefit with 20% of the effort.
True.
And, you know, all this other stuff that you do, may be overkill, you know, but, you know, we're all trying to minimize our chances of exposure. It's sort of a statistical thing. It's like, you know, it's like the guys on Omaha Beach, you know, it's like you're going into withering machine gun fire, and or the guys in the trenches in World War One. It's like, who lives and who dies? I mean, you do the best you can. And, you know, fortunately, the stakes are not usually death, but, you know, people survive even, you know, a hail of machine gun bullets and live again to tell the story another day. And they exercise prudent precautions and, you know, that's it.
That's it. That's that.
Oh, my gosh. Dorothy, we hope you and your husband get home safe and sound.
Yeah. And, all right. You know, and again, and so the other just thing to keep in mind is that, you know, you might be a little older, and they say that's a risk factor, but if you're metabolically healthy, like all my patients are, you would vouch for that, Layla, because you also consult with, you know, all our patients. All our patients are, you know, it's like, it's like the children in Lake Wobegon. All our children are above average in Lake Wobegon. All our patients are above average, you know, because they adhere to clean diets. They optimize their weight. They exercise. They take vitamin D and zinc and selenium
and C, know, and
God knows what else.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that that's they're invulnerable, but I think it minimizes the chances that they're going to have a bad outcome. And, you know, okay, you get a respiratory infection, you know.
All right. We have another question about this, Dr. Hoffman, with regard to the masks.
Okay. Can we put that over to part two, because we divide our podcast into two parts?
Time for part two.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wait.
Yeah.
Okay. Time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah.
It's already Saturday. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. So, let's pause, and when we return, we'll answer a question related to masks. And by the way, we open it up to questions that are unrelated to coronavirus, because, you know, that's what intelligent medicine is all about. You know, we cover a wide range of topics. And as the lockdown is relaxed, we're going to relax our lockdown. We never had a lockdown, but we had, you know, tremendous preoccupation with coronavirus. But other things bother people.
That's true.
And we'll deal with questions of all kinds. Yeah. Radio program at AOL.com, the destination. Hang in there, folks. We'll be right back with part two.